these same people in their meetings are advocating the overthrow of our government, actually the assassination of the President of the United States.
The snapping occurs to weaken an individual's thinking and total emotional controls down to the point where he is suggestible. And then after the person has snapped, he is then amiable to almost any suggestion of the religious right, with some reinforcement to keep them snapped, to keep their mind broken from straight thinking. And then once they are snapped, they can be told almost anything, even black is white, and they can be made to believe it.
When we saw the religious right using the stealth tactics, we knew that we had to come up with a way to uncover their candidates. So we began what we call a religious right national databank and started gathering the names of people who attend Christian right conferences and go for training. So when they show up at some state far away from here as a school board candidate, we can check her computer and find out, yes, they were trained by the Christian Coalition for Political Activism.
The militias that are in eight states for sure that we know about, very strongly connected to the Christian Coalition. The intertwinement of names there between the militias of these states and the Christian Coalition is just 100%.
Part two of our expose on the religious right in America, right now, on Alternative Views. This is the concluding part of our two-part series showing the various nefarious activities of the religious right in the United States. We will continue with our three sources, which we presented last time on Alternative Views, the documentary Onward Christian Soldiers, produced by the Institute for First Amendment Studies. We also have a member of that organization with whom we'll talk. That's Don Crosby, who has a lot of insight into the covert activities of the religious right. And we'll review sections of the book Holy Terror, The Fundamentalist's War on America's Freedoms.
And Pat Robertson, the television preacher who had quietly built an enormous broadcasting empire, decided to try for the presidency himself.
Government does not give us our rights and our liberties. God gives it to them, and government didn't give it to us, and government shouldn't try to take it away from us.
I covered Pat Robertson's campaign. It soon became clear that he didn't have the popular support to win. The religious right was also showing up in local politics. That same year, I filmed in a rural town in Pennsylvania. Two members of this fundamentalist church had been elected to the three-person county board of supervisors. Their attempt to translate their beliefs into public policy caused an uproar in the community.
Well, I think there's a lot of paranoia maybe in the community. I think there's a general sentiment among some of the citizenry that you might say the religious right is trying to exert some influence on the part of the government in this area.
Here is a Pat Robertson release of 1985. It talks about Potter County, God's country, It says, for the past 5 years, Christians have held two elected positions on the three-member county commission. Well, now, two out of three are Christian, and the third one, what is he supposed to be? I mean, why is he not a Christian, too? It names Tom Bowman and Susan Kefauver as the two Christians. Well, where is the other one? Is not Christian? Well, no, but he's not a Pat Robertson person, you see.
I work at the Community Resource Center as the administrator of all the county's social service programs. When I took the job in the county here, the two commissioners, the elected officials, were saved, and they began to witness to me. And they had a vision for what God was doing in this area, and as they began to describe what my part in that might be, I was drawn more and more to the Word of God and what was going on here. There is no family planning clinic in Potter County now because of the Christian views of the elected officials in the county.
They're being run over by right-wing steamrollers.
What kind of tactics do they use to, first of all, for individuals to go out and proselytize?
They will try to get into the churches first. This is where their most lucrative members are, lucrative number of members. And they will get the minister to establish a table out front for political action in the foyer of his church so that as people go by, they can pick up their now time-honored literature as to what the good candidates are that are pro-Christian right, anti-abortion, anti-homosexual, and such. And then if the minister disagrees, it's unbelievable. They have ways to establish an underground movement within that church through the local gossipers of the church, I presume, to oust that minister and put one in that will allow the Christian Coalition material to be distributed there, and they can talk up the religious extreme right candidates. You pick a time when there's a low vote turnout, and you get all the churchy people to vote according to this little card that they carried with them to the voters' booth, and vote this way. And this, plus the ordinary Republicans that think that they should have less government is better government, that plus the less government people, plus the people that just arbitrarily vote anything because they forgot their glasses, will carry an election. Presuming that it's only 5%, like it is in other countries, that are the radical religious right, that seems to be enough to take over the Congress and Senate. Now, the Christian Coalition claims as high as 30% believe in their cause. So what shall we say, somewhere between 5 and 30?
They call their approach stealth politics, that they do it covertly. But they also have the overtness of it as well, as we saw during the election. But a lot of this is lying low and working within their own organizations and getting out the church vote and keeping a low profile. Did you see much of this during this last election?
Yes, they're told to be very secretive about it and to try not to use their own church words in public. And just get in any way they can to and say whatever is necessary to get elected, and they will have the automatic vote of the Christian Coalition.
When Pat Robertson ran for president, many evangelical Christians got involved in politics for the first time. They had something to hope for. They got excited about this. But unfortunately for Robertson, the fall of the TV evangelists like Jim Baker and Jimmy Swaggart brought Robertson down with them because people put them all in the same boat.
I have sinned against you, my Lord.
Swaggart publicly confessed his sexual indiscretions.
And I would ask that your precious blood would wash and cleanse every stain until it is in the seas of God's forgetfulness, never to be remembered against me.
The rise of the religious right seemed to have come to an abrupt end.
one nation, under God.
Yet I found it hard to believe that the religious right would disappear into the woodwork. For years, I'd watched them create a thriving Christian culture, isolated from secular America. In 1982, I had filmed one of the many new fundamentalist schools. I'd become fascinated with this totally separate culture. It was easy to get my name on every religious right mailing list. The fundraising letters came weekly. I was urged to write letters to senators and congressmen. There were magazines to subscribe to, products to buy. I could walk with the Lord, lose weight with the Lord, and shop in Christian stores. The Christian market had become a $3 billion business.
Over here, we have Petra, their new album called No Doubt. They are probably the most popular Christian rock band. You know, just by looking at that album, you wouldn't necessarily know that it's a Christian album.
Yes, this will make and drive any parent crazy.
Don't tell me any mother-in-law jokes. Esther and I have something in common.
Oh, Ruth.
Right. All right.
All right. Bingo.
This is probably one of our most popular ones. It says, Jesus, have you considered the Lord lately? It's a takeoff on the Ford, have you considered a Ford lately? So it's kind of catchy.
Right. I wonder how the Ford Motor Company felt about it.
Well, I don't think they really minded too much, but it's neat because it's a neat way of sharing off your faith, and people come up to you and say, that's interesting, tell me more. So it's a non-threatening way of telling people about Christ, and they dress up as a Christian soldier.
We need to find a kid to try this out on.
There we go. We have the sword of the Spirit.
Spirits of the Word.
The Shield of Faith.
The Shield of Faith. So you hold it probably like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I proposed to my producer to make a film about this alternative culture, but he insisted that the religious right was dead.
It's not Mohammed bless America, it's God bless America.
Yet, I knew it wasn't. It was on this culture of white Protestant America that Pat Robertson built the new religious right. The mailing list of 2 million names that he had amassed during his failed presidential bid became the basis for his Christian Coalition, the most successful Christian right organization yet.
Should tell us otherwise, we have been looking for a political messiah. We have been hoping that if we could just elect the Gipper, or if we could just elect Pat Robertson, or maybe if we could just elect Bill Bennett, that we'd be able to turn the country around. And we really believed, as we began this in 1989, and we still believe today, that the Lord is going to honor our work if we will do what the Israelites did when they moved into their promised land. And that is, they occupied it one tract of land at a time.
After Pat Robertson's failed campaign, the religious right had to come up with a new tactic for winning in politics. So Ralph Reed, the executive director of the Christian Coalition, started something we call stealth tactics, which would hide the true agenda of the religious right. They now focused on local politics, grassroots, Republican local precincts, where they could take over the Republican Party, from county chapters, school boards, water control boards, hospital boards, the lower level politics, and then eventually they could work their way up.
This 1990 video, which the Christian Coalition made for its members, spells out a strategy. The Christian Coalition has since taken this tape out of circulation.
The mission of the Christian Coalition is simple: to mobilize Christians one precinct at a time, one community at a time, one state at a time, until once again we are the head and not the tail, and at the top rather than the bottom of our political system.
There are so many organizations involved in the religious right. Can we just tick off a few names and you can tell us about them? There's the Council for National Policy, the CNP, which the in these Times articles said is the kind of covert, extra-covert organization from which orders flow to all the rest of the religious right. Have you read much about that?
Just what you say, yes.
Yeah. And there's the NCPAC, the National Conservative Political Action Committee, and I guess that's the, what is that, the main PAC that distributes funds?
Yes. Under the umbrella of the Christian Coalition. Now, if these people gain any spotlight, they quick change the name of that group, as some of the good televangelists or the political leaders, when they came out too strong on a religious issue, and the churches helped, and the churches then were liable to lose their tax-free advantage because they were delving into politics, which via tax law they shouldn't.
Yeah, there was, I think, one called the Freedom Council, which was started by Pat Robertson back in 1981, but they ran afoul of the IRS, and so they supposedly shut down in 86. But I'm sure there's another organization that's
Yes, the habit of the Christian Coalition is just to change the name if there are problems involved.
There are other things like the Religious Roundtable and Coalition for Religious Freedom. Are you familiar with those?
These are common names, yes.
And they're kind of umbrella groups, I guess. But there are a lot of these things. But then there are some interesting ones. One is a shepherding kind of general overall category, which considers itself the activist vanguard. If you run into these people, they require full, complete submission to their pastor, is authoritarian, organized in cells, and sometimes it's covert, generally covert. Have you run across these people, the shepherding?
Mm-hmm. What are they like? Yes, a lot of it goes back to the sects and the cults of the 60s and 70s, where so many of people's children were taken away and their minds were snapped and brainwashed, and the parents tried to even hire somebody to snap them back again to reality.
Is that the deprogramming that they talk about?
Mm-hmm, yes, and the cults sued the parents. And the cult usually won under the strong armor of the First Amendment.
Well, also under Reagan, and with the approval of Ed Meese, a lot of right-wing religious people were put on the bench as judges all around the country too. So they're going to the religious right's going to get a good hearing from a lot of these people.
Yes, yesterday there was an article on television. Indicating a person going to a couple going to have an abortion and a policeman stopping them and for speeding and finding out what their purpose was, and the police then took the couple to a church for religious counseling for several hours, and then the people went ahead and had the abortion anyway.
The first is a grassroots strategy. We're going to have the nation divided up into seven state regions. And in each of those regions, we're going to have a full-time, paid, trained, professional regional director. They will be responsible for mobilizing people at the grassroots. Second aspect of the grassroots strategy is one that I've already touched on, and that's the leadership schools. We're going to put literally millions of dollars into the field to teach people. And then finally, and really most importantly, it's a strategy of prayer. You know, as good as it sounds, if it's our plan and not God's plan, it's not going to work. And you've got to always, as David saw it, when he went into battle against the Philistines, you've got to always get down on your face before God and say, Lord, do you want me to go up into battle or not?
Since 1989, the religious right has helped elect over 12,000 conservative Christians to school boards across America. They're affecting about 2,500 school boards right now. This shows how effective this grassroots politics has been.
And I believe that if we carry this fivefold strategy out with diligence, and with effectiveness, I think that we will be the most powerful political force in the nation by the end of this decade.
Good morning, Institute for First Amendment Studies. Doug Weed. Who's calling, please? The newspaper in Phoenix. I think we have some information on Doug Weed.
When we saw the religious right using the stealth tactics, we knew that we had to come up with a way to uncover their candidates. So we began what we call our Religious Right National Data Bank and started gathering the names of people who attend Christian Right conferences and go for training. So when they show up at some state far away from here as a school board candidate, we can check her computer and find out, yes, they were trained by the Christian Coalition for Political Activism. Another way we gather information is through volunteer, public-spirited citizens who infiltrate radical religious right groups and then report back to us with the information that they gather.
Skip Porteous's undercover agent insisted that I conceal his identity.
I have attended the Christian Coalition training schools in which you are instructed in so many things that would be contrary to what the teachings of Christ would have been. Number one, how to assess your opponent and what services to get to dig up as much dirt on that individual as you can dig up.
How do they get people hooked into this religious experience, this fundamental religious experience?
They're excellent salesmen. They are thoroughly brainwashed as to what they want to say and well led by some just ingenious leaders. Madison Avenue could never have done better. Hmm.
But how do they approach and get somebody actually hooked in this business called snapping, which I've heard about?
The snapping occurs to weaken an individual's thinking and total emotional controls down to the point where he is suggestible. And then after the person has snapped, he is then amiable to almost any suggestion of the religious right with some reinforcement to keep them snapped, to keep their mind broken from straight thinking. And then once they are snapped, they can be told almost anything, even black is white, and they can be made to believe it. And so on that level, they simply tell the person what to do. They can tell them to go proselyte and give them certain things to reel off as they go to visit people. Ring your doorbell and say this and this and this and this. The brilliant leaders behind it.
Now, they talk about complete submission to the Bible or to God or to their own leaders. How are they are they able to maintain this? How are they able to keep people from exercising their own individuality or own way of thinking? Is it complete brainwashing like we were taught back in the 50s during the Korean War and all that?
Yes, it's close. The reinforcement comes with a constant guilt complex and a fear that's instilled in those that have been snapped. This reinforces the snapping process until they're unable to think straight for themselves. Their thinking goes in a short loop, and it always comes back to, you're not saved if you haven't done this, and if you don't believe that the liberals should be overthrown, then you're not saved.
And if you have any doubts, and then it's your own fault. You're not either studying the Bible enough, or you're not submitting to the will of Jesus or God.
It's a very short loop of thinking. Yes, very short.
Now, this getting back to the snapping itself. How does the process work? Say some kids are met on the street by some of these right-wing religious nuts, and they. What is the approach? They try to get them to go to church, or just talk to them and steer the conversation to religion, or how does it work?
And then we have something you can't live without, and they bring them into the group, and then through various means they can be snapped until their thinking is not straight anymore.
But what actually is snapping? Is that just a point that occurs in this indoctrination, where the person's will is just snapped or gone or cut, mm-hmm. and they mm-hmm. give it over?
Exactly. It takes a few minutes of explanation.
Okay.
If I could snap your mind, if I could deprive you of food and sleep for a while, and constantly repeat certain themes to you that are not rational to you at this moment, and then at a certain time you begin to believe them, and I could lead you around by the nose the rest of your life if I continually reinforce this this snapping situation and put it upon. This began as far as we can tell in human history about 1600 years ago by a tribe in Australia called the Anada tribe, A-N-A-D-A tribe. They would take the young boys at the age of puberty and bring them into an isolated area, into a little hut, and they would semi-starve them, keep them in constant fear of something, with noises or whatever they happen to be, snakes or whatever they happen to be afraid of. And they had what they call a bull roper, something they could swing over their head, which makes a horrible noise. Oh, they would bring that out to these young puberty-age boys and just keep them frightened. They keep them awake at night and deprive them of sleep. And then after weeks of this, their elders, the people whom these boys respected, would converge upon these poor boys. And the elders would have masks on and frighten them. And at that point, the boys always would snap. If they didn't, they would do it again until they did snap. And snapping of the mind is just like entering another dimension almost in your personality. You're in a drastically reduced state of mind. You're only allowed to adhere to strict laws of the tribe. You live the rest of your life then in this dream state that you've been thrown into. You have no feelings of pain. Flies can walk across the eyeballs of these young boys and they won't feel it. And they can stand on one foot all day long, some surprising elements of strength and surprising endurance. Now, this snapping is also possible by other means in a normal human being. You can do it with guilt anxiety. If a person is emotionally stressed to begin with, he's more liable for snapping than otherwise.
That's why university students, perhaps, are really available and easy targets, because of their immaturity and because of the incredible stress that the university studies put on them.
Mm-hmm. A lot of them have snapped and go into cults and so forth, and even to the extreme of joining the suicide cults.
Suicide cults?
Mm-hmm.
You mean like Jonestown?
Yes, Jonestown. There's one in the newspaper yesterday where the French police have arrested, I think, 43 people trying to find the heart of this suicide cult. The 48 people have died so far in France as a result of that, and it's an ongoing investigation in France at the moment. Right. Switzerland had a similar incident about a month ago, and then, as you mentioned, Jonestown and such.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so sick.
But that's part of snapping, to convince the people they should commit suicide in the name of their God.
Oh, God. Well, they always say, you know, they're looking forward to death so they can go see Jesus, and they say, you know, why wait?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's unfortunately true.
Well, tell us some more about snapping then.
In this world, most snapping occurs in this society by guilt anxiety, an ego destruction, a sensory deprivation, peer pressure. You can do it with repetitive chants or songs by repeating it week after week or maybe even year after year. You can get a group into a frenzy, like at a rock concert, and create a snapping. Sometimes it's only lasts for a day or so, but it's snapping.
Even though it's not a religious thing. like
it. That's right. You can do it with easy answers and instant cure promises. Hmm. And snapping can occur, but it just happens that the religious people utilize it most.
Now, I noticed in this book, Holy Terror, when they would talk about different people and their experiences, that they would, that the person who was being cultivated or proselytized, if they expressed any doubt, well, they would be told to read John 3:16 or whatever it was over and over and over, or some other sections of the Bible over and over and over, and to contemplate on this all day long until they have no ego left. Everything has been completely submitted, not only the mind, but the emotions to this fundamentalist Christianity.
Well, the fundamentalists have taken the word ego as part of their vocabulary now, meaning it's of the devil, contrary to the meaning that the psychologists use. So here again we have a vocabulary problem between the fundies and the rest of the world. But on the subject of snapping, through forcing a person into some of these various things, promise of instant cures or easy solutions, you can get their mind to snap, and this is what happens. The after a person has snapped, it's impossible for that one to integrate his thoughts. He has a new image of himself, and he seems to be floating in space in kind of an accelerated, excited state. He's unable to focus. He's unable to think for himself, and he's unable to question the things that are pointed out to him, what he's told. He's under a state of illusion, detachment, withdrawal. His voice changes, and the pitch usually rises in a snapped person. Talks in a higher pitch all the time. We find that there's a lot of eccentricity. In the furthered state, women stop menstruating, men lose their secondary sex characteristics. There's a reduced activity of the central nervous system.
They become kind of like robots and automata.
Yes, it's a sort of a trance-like state. They'll feel, but they won't feel with all their feelings. They laugh, but not with all their laughter. Love, but not with all their heart. It's a reduced state of mind. They cry, but not with all their tears, and they seem to be doing this all the time with sort of a silly grin on their face.
Yeah, I've seen some of these really weird-looking religious nuts that will—they have this wild-eyed, strange look on their face. You know, like you might see at an insane asylum or something like that, is really spooky. And so these are people, and they maintain this state. They go up and down in their mental and emotional state, or is it pretty much straight and steady?
Well, they need to stay with their new peer group to maintain the state, with their church group or whatever it is. The serious brainwashing is easy from that point on. There's very little additional reinforcement that's necessary. And it's not hard then to control the rest of a person's life in that state. He's amiable to suggestion. He can be made to believe anything, no matter how illogical it is.
This map shows the Christian Coalition and the Republican Party. The black states indicate the states that the Christian Coalition is dominant in. It means that it really controls the Republican Party in those states. There are 18 of them, and then the red states, there are 13 of those states, indicate where the Christian Coalition has a significant power within the Republican Party.
So what does this mean?
Well, this means that the Christian Coalition actually controls the Republican Party. They decide what Republican candidates will be elected and what the Republican platform will be.
And then there's Jesse Helms in the Holy Terror. They talk about how Jesse Helms, he looks kind of spooky and weird and not very dangerous, but he has his own network where he ran kind of a reign of terror himself in the Reagan administration, putting his people in power in various places and various offices, raising a lot of money. So there are various centers of activity that the religious right and people in the religious right can use, and their organizations that can honeycomb all throughout the government.
Can a presidential candidate for the Republican Party get elected without their support?
I think at this point it would be impossible for a Republican nominee to win anything within the party without the support of the Christian Coalition.
See in 1994 something that I didn't think we could see until 1996. We're going to see an ideological shift in the Congress of the United States. It's going from left to right.
Let's remember that what we've got to do in the next 55 days is to focus on these elections that are happening right now. We want to see voter registration drives in every one of your churches. Our objective is to get out between 30 and 35 million voter guides on the Sunday before the November 8th election. By the time it's all over, one out of every three voters will have had a personal contact from the Christian Coalition. And I believe, as I said earlier today, on November 8th, there's going to be a big cheer that's going to be resounding across this country. So thank you very much.
For the first time in 40 years, the Republican Party became the majority party in Congress. 60% of the candidates who received a perfect approval rating by the Christian Coalition won. With the Republicans in control of Congress, the powerful Christian right became front page news. The Christian Coalition threw its weight behind the Republican contract with America, not only for ideological reasons, but also out of political expediency. This broadcast was meant for coalition members only. I was able to intercept it via satellite dish.
We will push the contract through. It will give us momentum and it will give us political capital going into the school prayer debates, the abortion debates, and the religious liberty debates that await.
At a news conference in Washington, the Christian Coalition unveiled its own agenda. They called it the contract with the American family.
It is not a theological statement. We make no threats. Today we issue no ultimatums, and we make no demands of either party.
No threats, no ultimatums. But Republicans were put on notice. The Christian Coalition would not support a Republican presidential candidate who was pro-choice. Republican candidates heeded the warning. They moved even further to the right. 700 Club. Whenever it had a chance, the religious right pushed its family values agenda, even if it meant cutting services for the poor.
Well, it's like so many other good programs, quote, it sounded like a good idea at the time. But set up a government agency to provide legal help for the poor. But the Legal Services Corporation suffers from a reputation as a haven for radical lawyers promoting their agenda at taxpayer expense.
Hey, this thing has been a nightmare. And you see 250-some thousand divorce cases, and that's year after year after year. We don't need a divorce bar funded by our money.
Christian Coalition members insist that they are not extremists.
This is not a group of radicals. We're not extremists at all.
We're really the mainstream in the country.
But Portia's secret agent heard otherwise in closed meetings of the coalition.
When I got into the Christian coalition groups, the right-wing Christians, I found a lot different people than you might hear them telling the public that they represent. They are trying to say to the public that they are there to protect family values, to have a country of righteousness where everybody lives morally, if I may use that quote. But on the other side of the coin, these same people in their meetings are advocating the overthrow of our government, actually the assassination of the President of the United States. I had a conversation at another meeting with one man who spoke, and he was saying that the president should be shot. The man that made this statement also is a trainer of militia.
Last week we found the militias that are in 8 states for sure that we know about, very strongly connected to the Christian coalition. The intertwinement of names there between the militias of these states and the Christian coalition is just 100%.
Now, these individual militias, or are they officially started state militias?
Oh, no, individual militias. They try to pattern themselves after the Swiss militia that, of course, has private armies. But the intelligence of the Swiss is far from the intelligence of the Christian coalition. each member of the militia in the United States has an envelope, and he keeps this for 1 month, and upon orders from the head people, if there's an emergency, he opens the envelope. Otherwise it goes unopened until the next month, when he receives another envelope. And of course, the danger of this,
these are orders of what to do if they
what to do in an emergency.
Uh-huh.
Yes. The danger of this is that there'll be a synthetic emergency that will trigger something and cause all kinds of problems. Mm. But the more immediate problem, though, is as we mentioned, that the prayer group in Washington will set up their purgatory prayer situation and ask you to be converted, for instance, and you're not converted. Therefore, they issue God's judgment upon you. Therefore, it would be this militia that would execute God's judgment. That I think would be the real danger. This sounds wild-eyed, but remember, we're dealing with snapped minds here that are operating at some 20% of their mental capacity.
Well, it certainly makes sense if these people support governments with death squads overseas that they're going to do the same thing in the United States.
It seems to be happening.
With the Oklahoma bombing, the connection between the religious right and the militia came under scrutiny. Porteous undercover agent recorded this tape at a Christian right meeting 2 days after the bombing.
The thing is, you know, we're in a war. And in war, there are casualties. That's what war is all about.
In our research of the radical religious right, about a year and a half ago, we started noticing people from what we might call mainstream religious right groups appearing at patriot and militia meetings. The militia in Michigan is headed by a Baptist minister, and they have a chaplain, and it's a pretty much of a Christian organization. And many of the militias are Christian-based. We see a very definite connection between the militias or the patriot movement and the religious right in the United States because of the conspiracy theories. For instance, Pat Robertson had a bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list a couple years ago called The New World Order, in which he elaborated on a theme of the UN taking over the United States and a one-world government with Satan behind this. And he talked about certain European bankers who were controlling all this. And this is a theme we see throughout the whole patriot or militia movement.
If you have ever heard of the New World Order, you may know that our country is now being used like a tennis ball by the international elitists vying for our money, guns, and sovereignty.
We're hearing noises about a new world order. We're hearing that the United Nations, which for 25 years was a silly joke, suddenly is going to rule the world. And that we're to cede the sovereignty of America to this organization that voted against our interests 85% of the time from its inception till the Gulf War. And we say, what is happening in the world? And into that void steps an organization called the Christian Coalition.
What can be done to counteract this? First of all, on an individual basis, how do you de-snap somebody?
The first thing you have to do is take them away from their group that they're in now and bring them back to their original family group, if there is such a thing. Nearly every community has a fundamentalist anonymous group that they can join and talk to people who have the same problems that want to be deprogrammed and get their own mind back away from their fundamentalist training. The person needs to be challenged directly by a very intelligent person that knows what he's been taught to believe, and just challenge him and make him answer, make the patient answer on each item, and challenge him in a not a vicious way, but a serious way, so that he has to realize that what he's been thinking is not right, and then it'll suddenly occur to him that something is wrong with what he's been saying and believing, and he will step back then.
How long a period of time can this take?
It can take a couple months. And then he needs to get with a new support group, maybe the ones he's loved the most in the past, but certainly stay away from the old group that put him in the snapping position in the first place. Now, people after this deprogramming say that they could not maintain a train of thought before. They couldn't put two sentences together in a logical way. And another reported that their dog would have nothing to do with them after they had joined this cult. And then after deprogramming, they left the cult, and the dog and the patient were friends again. So reprogramming is simply a break with the present fundamentalist situation, back again in a reconnection with the past. And it can use some intelligent, maybe not professional, but intelligent reinforcement to keep the person back, because he was brain dead then for a while. Now the cult argument is strong against this. They stand behind the First Amendment, and they've won some court cases on it. The cult agreement, the Christian Coalition's argument against this would be that these people are being violated when you try to snap them back again to the way they were before, because you're violating this person's religious beliefs. Now, this, doesn't it beg the question? Because as long as that patient, that person remains in that condition, he has no rights. He's brain dead.
No free will.
He's brain. So can the Bill of Rights protect a person that's been violated by this dark side of religion? Does the Bill of Rights protect the dark side of religion, the First Amendment? Is an individual free to give up his freedom of thought? I think not.
What can be done on a societal and political level?
The best thing to do would be terribly strong, but we've made some progress in it, and that would be to take the overt violations of the fundamentalists, like in the Assembly of God, where they have taken their youth group and ministers, the Assembly of God ministers, have made homosexuals out of the boys in this youth group. The group's called the Royal Rangers. And our court case in California was settled several months ago. Assembly of God ministers were guilty to the tune of $1.75 million. This money then was paid to the to the parents of the children who were molested.
Good Lord.
But the important thing is the lawsuit was against the church and not the minister. This means that the members of the Assembly of God Church were liable for the action of the minister. So, if we can continue this thinking and make people that are snapped by the fundamentalists to make the congregation liable for that, we've never lost a suit on any psychological basis for improper counseling. There's been many of those, and the churches have all, the fundamentalist churches have always lost because of improper counseling on people. But when those lawsuits then get back to the individual church member, then I think there will be a great straightening out of the low, call them black churches.
Mm-hmm. But you're still going to have that stratum up above where the people, the Christian coalition, are interlocked with the military-industrial complex, and they have their various structures of power up at the top, and with the ability to raise tremendous amounts of money to continue this this drive for power and counter-revolution.
Well, if the class action suit works against the fundamentalists, it might well work against the Christian coalition
mm-hmm.
on a class action suit against them.
The Messias is niet and kan niet die geweldenaar zijn die met macht en geweld anderen onder de voet loopt. Maar de Messias is de zachtmoedige. Het is de mens die de wil van God doet door solidair te zijn met de armen, met de zieken, met de gestoorden.
It amazes me that it took me 15 years to realize how dangerous the Christian fundamentalists are. Convinced that they have God on their side, their intolerance of every other opinion is a threat to the very principle of democracy. Do I think religious fundamentalists have a right to engage in politics? Yes, but I believe their agenda is uncharitable and often cruel. And don't they dare say that I'm therefore not a Christian?
We want, ladies and gentlemen, as soon as possible, to see a working majority of the Republican Party in the hands of pro-family Christians by 1996 or sooner. We want to strive for the election of a conservative pro-family majority in the United States House of Representatives by 1996. Next, of course, we want to see the White House in pro-family Christian hands at least by the year 2000 or sooner. We're going to come back this year. We're going to come back in 93. We'll be there again in 94. We'll be there again in 95 and 96 and 97 and 98 and 99. We're going to keep coming back till we win it all.
I have a little bit, two or three sentences here of conclusion by the authors of Holy Terror. They say, we are left with the same overriding question. What does the fundamentalist right have against human beings? What grudge do they hold against the human mind, human feeling, and our capacity to choose? In their escape from humanity through high technology, would they turn us all into machines programmed by the scriptures? We cannot live as machines surrendered to Christ and computers, nor will the United States long endure as a fundamentalist nation. But neither can we survive as two nations, one fundamentalist and the other secular.
And that brings us to the end of another Alternative Views.
frequently hear from viewers who request a list of news publications, which we use on Alternative Views, and also a reading list for U.S. power structure in the mass media. If you would like to have these, send a stamped, self-addressed envelope to the Alternative Information Network, P.O. Box 7279, Austin, Texas, 78713. You must send a self-addressed stamped envelope. We would like to thank our crew for help making the program possible, Brian Lynch, Ariel Powell, and Susan Millison. Susan and Ariel were on the cameras, and Brian did everything else. Well, we'd like to thank our people from the Institute for First Amendment Studies, Skip Porteous and Don Crosby, for bringing us our documentary and for providing us with the interesting interview about the religious right in the United States. And we highly recommend the book Holy Terror, which gives a lot of insight into the religious right. Now let's roll the credits for the documentary you saw, Onward Christian Soldiers. Alternative Views is a presentation of the Alternative Information Network, P.O. Box 7279, Austin, Texas, 78713. So that's our address. If you have a pen and paper, like to jot it down so you can send us a letter, we'd be very glad to hear from you. We've received thousands of letters over the past 17 years we've produced the program. And we're very proud of our 543 programs which we've produced. That's the Alternative Information Network, P.O. Box 7279, Austin, Texas, 78713. Goodbye.